Your host, Lunaria Gaia, and here we talk all things body image, self-esteem, your thinking in your mind. How do you connect true to you in every part of who you are? I want you to know that all of you is welcome. So sit back and relax and listen to today's episode. Sending you love. Hello and welcome to a very special episode of the More Confidence with Luna Gaia podcast. Because I, Luna Gaia, your host here, have just completed a 10-day Vipassana retreat, a silent meditation retreat for 10 days. And I know that many of you have questions around it. Many of my clients, many of my people on social media have watched me gone away for the last 10 days. Although I did the, you know, secret squirrel thing where we schedule posts and I had, you know, I was still online from that perspective, but I haven't actually been online and present and sharing my experiences because of me being on Vipassana. And I know that many of you have questions. What is a Vipassana? What was it like? What did I experience? How hard was it? How good was it? Do you reach states of bliss? What it's all about? Is it religious? Is it spiritual? What is Vipassana all about? So on today's bonus episode of the More Confidence with Luna Gaia podcast, I invite you to come have a cup of tea with me. Come have a cup of tea with me. So maybe it's time that you pop the kettle on. Go put the kettle on now. Press pause. Go do the thing. Put the kettle on. Maybe grab a notebook or a journal. I know that some of you are going to be driving or walking because you do that while you listen to podcasts. Maybe you're at the gym. But if you can, maybe just take a cuppa with me and join this conversation. That's good tea. That was good, very good tea. Join this conversation because what I'm about to share with you of my experience over the last couple of weeks, the last 10 days, 12 days that I've just experienced is immeasurable in terms of the lessons. Now, I experienced it, right? I experienced this doesn't mean that you've experienced this. Now, I'm sure that there's people out there who listen to my podcast, who watch my podcast, who have absolutely done Vipassanas. I know that there is one person that follows me who has done it 27 times, something an exorbitant amount, an absolute amount that I can't even begin to understand. But the very purpose of this conversation is to answer a lot of the questions and to give you a download around what I've experienced. And perhaps not even why you ought to do it. Towards the end of our conversation, for those of you who are curious, I'm going to share with you who I think should do it, maybe who I think is not quite ready to do it. But that's not even about this. This is about what is Vipassana? What is the training all about? Because I said just before that I went on a retreat. The retreat makes it sound like, you know, we're lying about getting massages and sitting by the pool and having a glorious time. That is not what a Vipassana is all about. So the retreat is an inaccurate word, and the word that they use is course. You go to a 10-day Vipassana course, and a 10-day Vipassana course is silent. So I'm here to share with you that experience today. As I said, grab yourself a cuppa, strap on in, because there is some gold that's about to be shared, not only from my own personal experience, because as you would know, if you follow my podcast, if you've been following any of my work for any significant period of time, even if you've just joined me, thank you, by the way, you'll discover that whatever I experience, my lived experience, becomes the teachings that I forward on to you. You know, everything that I've learned in my life and I continue to learn comes forward. Always. It always comes forward. Actually, before I went on the retreat, on the course, I had said to all of my clients, you know, when I work with my clients, we spend 6 months together. I only have 10 one-on-one clients at a time for this reason, because they have full access to me whenever they want it, right? So in between the sessions, they are fully supported by me. They can send me voice messages, they connect with me, they ask me questions, and I reply back to them. So of course, I needed to tell all of my clients that I would be completely offline for, you know, 12 days. 12 or 13 days, close to 2 weeks. Let's call it 2 weeks. I'm gonna be offline for a couple of weeks. So I needed to prep everybody in the lead up to that. Does that make sense? I needed to make sure. And what I had said to them was, you're about to get upgraded. You're about to get upgraded. And how is that possible? How is me going on a meditation course possibly lend itself to my clients getting an upgrade? Well, it's by proxy, right? So because they have chosen me as their guide, because I'm the one to coach them, because from my client's perspective, they are in my container, whatever happens to me from an energetic expansion point of view, they also experience that. Not only that energetically, let's just go really practical for a moment here. The very practical application of that is whatever I learn when I've upgraded, I'm going to come back and I'm going to deliver it to my clients. And that happens again and again and again and again and again. Because as a coach, as a mentor, as a spiritual guide, as a ever-growing and evolving human on this beautiful planet and reality to which we call Earth, I am constantly growing. And I'm doing courses and I'm spending time with my mentors and my coaches, and I invest in my own personal and spiritual development. So therefore, I'm always encouraging my clients to do the same. I will always bring that back to my clients. And so this is what I want to share with you over the next little while. The next little while of this conversation is to share with you not only my, you know, personal experience of some of the bliss states that I had and some of the absolute torturous states that I had, but to share with you the lessons from a training such as Vipassana, because training is a more accurate word. It is very much a very practical, experiential, like it's an experience thing. You're not sitting there taking notes. In fact, from a Vipassana perspective, let me just give you some of the guidelines. So you're there for 10 days. 10 days is the course structure. So you arrive on, say, day zero. We arrived on a Wednesday. And then the course runs for 10 full days, morning and night. And then you finish and you go home on the 11th morning. So this is actually my second Vipassana. So this is the second time that I've done this. The first one I did 5 years ago. And I very naively didn't look at the dates particularly well. And I was like, yeah, I'm gone for 10 days. I'm gone for 10 days. So I kind of thought that the course would be for 8 days. And day one is when I arrive and day 10 is when I leave. And then I had actually 2 more days to go. So lucky I figured that out, because before the training started, like on day zero, I figured that out because I had a partner at the time and I was coming back. He thought I'd be back 2 days earlier. There is no phones. It doesn't mean you're completely non-contactable. Don't get me wrong. Like, if an emergency happened, someone can come to you and say, okay, cool, something has happened. Like, not from your own phone, but you can, you know, that they can call the center and the center can get in touch with me. Like, you're able to be contacted. But the premise of a Vipassana is that you live like a monk. You live like a monk or a nun for that period of time, for the 10 days. So when you arrive, you make some commitments. You make commitments that you will not write anything. You will not speak. You will not read anything. Not only in terms of it being a silent meditation retreat. So you're there with another probably 50 women and another 50 men. And you're not to make eye contact. You're not to make gestures. It's known as noble silence. And this is how a monk would live. You're there to be inside of yourself. You're there to have the experience to be with you, not to be with other people. So even though you're living in community, the commitment is that you adhere to noble silence at all times. There are some exceptions to that. If you need to talk to management about getting more toothpaste, or, you know, you need to ask a question to the teacher at a specific time, you are able to speak, but you're not allowed to speak. You're not allowed to make eye contact. You're not allowed to gesture. Even, you know, as somebody, you're about to bump into them, right? You just have to stop and pause and figure it out without gesturing, without talking. So without talking non-verbally as much as we are talking verbally. So this is one of the commitments that you make when you arrive at the center. Obviously, on the first day, you're talking. On day zero, you're talking and you're registering and getting your accommodation sorted and all that stuff. you arrive and you make this commitment that you are not going to talk. You're not is going to be silent. You're going to adhere to noble silence so that you can have the practice of being like a monk and going within. That's really what it is. So let me clarify that for you. So it's of course no phones, it's no books, it's no writing materials, it's no gestures, it's no eye contact. It's no dancing, like you're not to go crazy, you can't run. It's not like you're not there to like exercise hardcore. And what they ask you to do effectively is whatever rites and rituals you already have, just to leave them at the door for 10 days, just so you can give the practice, just so you can give this technique its proper dues, right? It allows you to be able to fully immerse yourself in the experience and the technique of meditation that they're teaching for the 10 days. And they ask you to put aside anything else that you do. And it's open to everybody. If you're religious, if you're Hindu or Christian or Jewish or Muslim, it makes no difference. It's open to everybody. It's not to renounce to say that you're bad or that your religion doesn't work or that if you say you're new age and you're esoteric and you do body work and energetic work, everyone is welcome. Everyone is welcome at a Vipassana course. They just ask you for 10 days just to give this full credit, just to give it a full trial, just to see what happens. Just think to yourself for a moment. Do you know what is inside of your own mind? And to what depth do you understand what is inside of your own mind? Because we live in a world where we're constantly distracted, right? Constantly. There is something constantly holding our attention. Be that social media, of course, our phones, we're contactable 24/7. And then within that contact piece, within that phone, we have a limitless amount of stimulation. We are constantly stimulated. How much time do you spend alone, silent, and in your own head? And ask this to yourself, how, what's the word? How willing are you to discover what's in that head of yours? Because that's what that's about, right? I speak to this. I speak to the, I'm here to teach you how to love yourself. I'm here to teach you how to have confidence. I'm here to teach you how ultimately to master your mind. Because that's the thing that's screwing you, right? The thing that is screwing you is the ego. The ego that's up here in your head with all those negative self-talk, that's the thing that's getting in your way right now. And so something like a Vipassana is a way for you to go in and really have a look. In fact, when the teacher comes in on at the end of each day, there's a discourse, and the teacher is sharing that on day one, the teacher shares that you're having on operation. It's effectively what we're doing. We are operating deeply into your mind for 10 days. And look, when it comes to the expanse of your life, 10 days is a relatively short period of time. It goes pretty quickly. Like, can you, like 10 days ago for you, like a week and a half, doesn't seem that long ago, right? But to go within, to sit with yourself and to observe yourself for 10 days, I wonder how you're feeling about that right now. Like, is that like, does that excite you? Does that make you go, no way in hell, I do not want to visit that part of myself. I do not want to go there. Are you curious? Are you like, I wonder if I could do that? Not just be silent for 10 days. That's what people say to me. I had my mother's husband said to me, or said to her the other day before I went, oh yeah, I could do that. I could be silent for 10 days. Honestly, my friends, being silent for 10 days is the easiest part. It's the easiest part. I remember my first Vipassana, and it was a very, very challenging. It was a very, very challenging training. Wonderful, incredible, and I had what I now call a God moment on day seven. I'm going to talk to you about that in a second. It was challenging, and it wasn't the silence. It wasn't the I don't have a phone or I can't read or I can't write or, you can't go for a run or do heavy exercise or that kind of stuff. And you have to eat vegetarian food and you're up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'll get to that in a second too. That's not the hard part. It's not the hard part at all. It's going within, spacing yourself for long periods of time. I'm getting ahead of myself and I want to come back to what happens on that day zero. So you make this commitment. You make this commitment that you're going to be here and you're going to do this thing and you're going to stay the whole time. So you literally hand over your valuables. You hand over the keys to your car. You hand over your phone, any valuables that you have that you want to keep safe. And that gets put, registered and put in a little bag and put in a massive lockbox that then gets put in a, ironclad kind of safe. Everybody does it. You hand over your possessions, your things, so you can't leave, right? You can't leave without having to have some serious conversations because, they effectively say to you, you're here to commit for 10 days. Obviously, if an emergency happens outside in your life and someone dies or something happens and you got to go, ideally that doesn't happen. But, there's exceptions to the rule. But for the most part, you are there and you are committed, irrelevant of how uncomfortable you get, irrelevant of how much you're going to run away. And you do want to run away, by the way. They make it hard for you to leave because not because they want to force you or crack a whip or because of any of those reasons, but they understand that there is a discipline that is required. There is a treatment that you are going to experience. So if the way they describe it is it just say you're halfway through an operation and you're like, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm done. They're like, we like you're the wound is open. We haven't done the thing. We haven't fixed the problem yet. We need to finish this. Nah, I'm out. I want out. It's pretty likely that you're going to bleed out. It's dangerous, right? You need to complete the operation, which is why the 10 days is the way that it is. Are you scared yet? Are people sitting there going, huh, is this insane? Is this a cult? Despite the fact that I'm quite hippily dressed today, know that it's far from being a cult. The Vipassana itself is said to be the teaching of the Buddha, but it's not Buddhism. Hear us loud and clear here when I'm saying that it's not Buddhism. That's not what it is. It is not a religion. It's not ritualistic. It's not pray to Buddha and hopefully I get enlightened. That's not what it is. This is a practical, experiential meditation technique, the meditation technique that Buddha did to get liberated and enlightened, that he then taught to the world. And it has been, what's the word? It has been captured, it has been kept, it has been retained for 2,500 years. It got lost across a lot of places in India because Buddha was Indian and at the time it was Pali, like the language is Pali. He was in India when he became enlightened. That's what happened, Indian prince. He, 2,500 years ago, that's what happened, right? As far as we know, as far as the stories tell us, that's what happened. This is the teaching of Buddha, but not from an intellectual experience. I really want to drive this home. Vipassana is not about I'm going to go down, and I'm going to do a course, and I'm going to write things down. I'm going to write things down and go, yep, that seems like a good idea. And then I'm going to pray, and I'm going to do eight Hail Marys to Buddha, and I'm going to be good. It's not what this is about. Your commitment is to learn the technique, literally the technique that Buddha taught to free you from suffering. That's literally what it's all about. Think about for yourself, how much misery is there in the world? How much? You look outside in the world, how much misery is there? A shit ton, right? There is so much misery out there in the world. And not only out there in the world in terms of war, in terms of poverty, in terms of sex slave, in terms of child abuse, in terms of, the major atrocities that we have in the world, but just in your own life. Aren't you suffering? Aren't you experiencing like, oh my God, I'm constantly in my own head and it's a hellhole up there? It's why I teach what I teach. I've been teaching you for the last 10, 13, or 13 years since I've been doing this work, how to free yourself from your mind. And Vipassana is yet another tool for that. So the first Vipassana I ever did was 5 years ago. It was 5 years ago, 2018. And I felt called to go. I felt called to see if I could do it. And at the time, it was, I want to see if I can go be silent for 10 days. I want to see what it would be like to put my phone down and not read and write and be distracted and entertained and stimulated the whole time. Very clearly on day seven, and I remember this like it was this morning. I remember it so clearly, and I speak about this around my first Vipassana training, that I had my God moment. And when I use the word God, I want you to know that it's with a small g. I'm not talking about a man in the clouds. Okay? I'm not talking anything to do with Christianity. You can call it life, you can call it source, you can call it wisdom, you could call it energy, you can call it the universe, you can call it consciousness. I interchange all those things. I often use the word God because I find it the most easiest. It's all that it is. So if you don't like the word, the you use the if you don't like the word God, just translate it right now. Cool? Just translate it. I had my God moment. I had a God moment. I had the God moment to which I found God within. That's what I've described, because for me, consciousness, for me, the life, if I was to call God, it is within you. And I'm going to sometimes I use when I talk spirituality, I use references from spiritual or religious groups, biblical texts, or from the Buddha, or from the Quran, or from Judaism, or any other religion, Hinduism, or whatever, because in I believe that in every religion, the truth of life, the truth of the universe, the truth of God, it exists within that. Exists within the text, exists within that. What has happened, in my opinion, when it comes to religion, is that it has become egofied. That people, man, has come along and gone, well, I want to be the guru. I want to have the power. And if I have the power, then I get to have power over you. It becomes an egoic experience. It becomes about dogma and rites and rituals and who do you need to praise, and you can only access God through the priest or the shaman or whoever, right? In my personal experience, in every single one of those, the root of those religions began as truth, and the truth is that it is within you. The kingdom of heaven is within you. See, that is from the Bible, right? The kingdom of heaven is within you. God is within you. It is your higher self within you. And that is what we are called to. We are called to our higher self. And that's what I believe is God. And that, when I speak about having my God moment, it was that, like, goosh, like the paddles that woke me up, that, oh my God, God is within me experientially. That God is within me experientially, not intellectually. It's not an intellectual experience. It's not up here. It's not cognitive. It was in my heart. So day seven. Day seven, I've done a week of silent meditation. This is 5 years ago. I've done a week of silent meditation. I have been doing all the things. It was challenging, and I'm going to get to all of the details in a moment. We're coming in, it's the tea break, 5 to 6 o'clock. And I know that we've got a 6 to 7 meditation, and I don't know if I can go back in. I've had my tea break, and I'm distraught internally. Like, externally, nothing. I could have gone and seen the teacher, but I didn't. And I'm there, and I'm scratching my head. And because I was told, like, let go of all your rites and rituals, I wasn't doing any conscious positivity work within my mind. I just kind of like let it go. A distinction that I've changed this time around, because I don't believe that having a Good health, healthy, positive self-talk is a rite or a ritual. Anyway, I am there. It's day seven. It's day seven. It's 5:30 in the afternoon. I know that I'm about to go in for the 6 to 7 meditation, and I can't bear it. I just don't think I can do it. I'm falling to my knees, quite literally. I remember exactly where I was sitting, and I started drawing in the dirt because I wasn't allowed to write, and it was so hard for me. So I'd picked up a stick and I was drawing shapes in the dirt, and I just didn't know. I just couldn't. I couldn't. And so inside of my head, I was like, "Whoever is out there, whoever exists, God, Buddha, any of the gods or goddesses, I don't care who it is. I don't care who it is." I prayed in that moment. I fell to my knees internally and said, "I can't do this. If anything exists, I need you now." And a voice came up with inside of me, inside of me. The voice came up with inside of me and began to speak. And I'd like to say it was a voice I'd never heard before, which it wasn't. It wasn't a voice that I'd ever heard that clearly before. What was fascinating about this voice, and I'm going to share with you what that voice said to me. What's fascinating about that voice is that it was my own. God came to me in that moment. Life came to me. Consciousness came to me. I allowed it to come and bubble inside of me in that moment, falling to my knees, praying to whoever existed out there to come help me, that I needed it, that I was no longer, I couldn't do it myself. That's the moment that I came to. 5 years ago, I came to the moment where I realized I cannot do this myself. I need help. My small self, I didn't know it at the time, but my mind self, this self, the lunar self, could not do it. She needed help. And when I prayed and I fell to my knees, the voice that answered was my own. And I'm sure that you'd like to know what that voice said to me. Allow me to have a cup of tea. What that voice said to me was that every journey, apart from the first step, apart from the decision to make the journey, that's a hard step, the decision to make the journey. It is a hard step, there's no doubt about that. To take that step, to take the first step, to make the decision is a very hard step. This is what the voice said to me. But there's often enthusiasm on the path. When you first go out to take a mountain, this is the voice. When you first go to hike a mountain, there's enthusiasm. You want to do it. You're sitting at the bottom of the mountain, you're looking up, you're like, I wonder what it's like up there. I want to go to the top of that. And so you journey out. And you probably know it's going to be challenging, but there is enthusiasm within you. And the voice said, most people give up on any journey at 70%. 70%? Why 70% is what I'd asked. Why 70%? And God, the voice, said to me, because when you climb a mountain, when you hit 70%, the bottom seems a really, really long way away. It's hard to see how far you've come at 70%. And perhaps there's a lot of clouds, there's density, there's trees everywhere. You can't see the bottom. And you can't see the top either. It is dense at 70%. 70 and 80%. It's hard to get to sit from 70 to 90%, the voice said to me, is the hardest part of any journey. The hardest part because you're blind at that point. Because 70 to 90%, you can't see the top, you can't see the bottom, you've come a long way, you're tired, you're fatigued, and there doesn't seem to be anything in sight. And so the voice said to me, you don't need to get yourself through to 100% You need to get yourself through to 90. Because once you hit 90%, once you hit 90, you see the top now. Once you hit that, once you cross the threshold into the 90 to 100%, you can see the top. You know you're close. And that gives you another burst of enthusiasm because you can see it. Most people will give up between 70 to 90% because that is the darkest part. That is the hardest part. That is the part where you need to find some level of enthusiasm that you don't know exists. You have to dig really deep at 70 to 90%. It's so easy to give up between 70 and 90% because you're over halfway, sure, but you've still got a hell of a long way to go. That is what this voice said to me. This voice said to me that and told me that I only needed to get through two more days of the training, not three. And I didn't understand that. I didn't understand how possibly there were still 3 whole days left and this meditation right now. The voice told me, trust me, you've only got 2 days left. The last day will be a breeze. Dong, dong, dong. The bell had rung. Quite literally, within the facility, it was time to go back to the hall, back to my meditation cushion, sit there for an hour. I took a breath. I got up and I let myself be led. Was I happy about it? Nope. Was I enthusiastic? Nope. Did I now understand that it was going to be dark for the next 2 days? Yep. And that I only needed 2 more days of energy. I needed 2 more days and then the third I'd be okay. I didn't know how that was going to be. I didn't know how that was going to work out. And so I sat for the hour-long meditation. I don't remember that meditation very clearly at all. But what I do remember is the discourse. So every evening, like I said to you, there is a discourse. The teacher teaches a discourse, shares you with the information, right? Information pertaining to the technique, to the training, what to expect, all that kind of stuff. Often very funny. The teacher is a man named Goenka. He's no longer with us. And so you get it on the recordings. They were recorded back in the 90s. And he is a funny, funny Burmese Indian man. Very, very funny. A delight. He chants, Bhavatu Sabu Mangalam. You get really used to this chanting that happens all day. And they're the teachings of the Buddha that he's chanting. Right. In the beginning, I always have a giggle and go, oh, yeah, this sounds so bad. But then by the end of it, I'm like, Bhavantu. Sometimes, like, some like in the mornings, he chants for like half an hour. I move to the discourse. I'm there. And every single evening, he comes on and he says, day one is complete. You have 9 more days left to work. So on and so forth. Day two is complete. You have 8 more days left to work. And so on this seventh day, he goes, you have, he goes, day seven is complete. You now have 3 days left to work. Then, my friends, what he said to me next, what he said to the training next, will forever in me, I'm getting goosebumps now and almost welling up thinking about it, will forever be the confirmation of God, the confirmation of my God moment, the confirmation of the universe being completely aligned and succinct and the truth there experientially, it will forever be the turning point for me. Because I had my God moment, right? Goenka, the teacher, says day seven is complete. You have 3 more days left to work, like he had done for 6 days previously. Why would I expect it to be any different? And then he says, But you only have 2 days to work seriously. Now, I got really curious at this point because an hour and a half earlier, sitting in the dirt on my knees, surrendering to God, I just got this message that I only needed to get through 2 more days, not three. So I've lent in. I'm curious why? What's happened? And he says, day eight and day nine will be your most serious work. On day 10, on the last day, after the morning meditation, the 7 to 8 meditation, after the 7 to 8 meditation, noble silence will end. And you'll talk and you'll chatter. And on that day, you will only meditate 3 times instead of 10. I'll get to that point later. You'll only meditate for the 3 times and you'll be free to talk and to chat and to hang out. The real work is done on 8 and 9, 70 to 90%. My God moment led me, fully led me. I was told information, and an hour and a half later was confirmed directly to me that on the last day, on the 10th day, I will be free. My first Vipassana was that experience. I don't know what yours will be like if you ever do it. I don't know what other people's would ever be like. But that was my moment. It's not to say that day 8 and day 9 were not very, very hard. I don't remember the hardness of them necessarily. I'm sure that they were. But I knew by that point. I now knew I could. I knew it was going to be dark, but I knew it before I went in. And then it was confirmed directly. Pretty magical, huh? Pretty amazing. I share with you this story of the first Vipassana and this God moment because it gives context for this second experience that I have had. To which I'm going to explain and share with you more in part two. This has been part one. I want to allow you, maybe this is your commute, maybe this is the way that you have gone for a walk. I'm going to share with you in more detail part two. And very pertinently as well, because it was my second Vipassana. It's the second time that I've done it, 5 years on. I want to share with you why I decided to go back a second time. When really the first time, I would describe the first Vipassana that I did to be the single most challenging thing that I've done on purpose in my entire life up until that point. I had never done anything harder. That was the most challenging thing that I've ever done. Incredible, powerful, God moment, absolutely challenging. So challenging, so very, very hard. Fell to my knees, as you know. And so I'm going to share with you why I decided to go back. Why now, 5 years later? You know, they recommend going every year. What took me 5 years to do it again? And the kind of experiences that I had this time round. Still challenging. I'll give it that, but in a completely different way. So tune in for part two of this conversation of the More Confidence with Lunar Guide podcast. If you've got questions about Vipassana or if you've got questions about any of this, please be welcome to get in touch with me. As always, you know, go to my website, www.moreconfidence.com.au. You can contact me there or any of the socials. I'm pretty sure a bunch of you know how to find me anyway. And if you've got anybody who's curious about Vipassana, if you've gone, hey, that sounds like a really cool thing, go check it out. You can just look up Vipassana. The spelling of it is in the show notes. You Google that, you'll find it. There's centers all across the world. And if you have any questions for me, anything that you'd like to know that doesn't get answered in part one or part two, or maybe we'll even do a part three. I'm not sure just yet. I'm going to see how we go for time. Feel welcome to reach out. on any of the social media platforms, you absolutely know where to find me. Thank you for hanging out for part one. Make sure you come back for part two of my experience at Vipassana. Thank you so much for listening to the More Confidence with Luna Gaia podcast. I hope you feel more confident, more self-assured, and ready to go tackle the world's problems and maybe kick ass in some of your dreams. If you haven't already, I would love for you to like and subscribe, follow, and maybe leave a review so that other people know how to find this awesome podcast too. If you're wanting to sink your teeth into something even more juicy, my number one best-selling book, Perfectly Imperfect, Your Complete Guide to Loving Yourself and Loving Your Body, is now available on all good bookstore sites, both in print, digital, and I narrated it for Audible as well. If you think that coaching or maybe one of my courses is for you, why not head to www.moreconfidence.com.au and get in touch and see if we can talk. And of course, you can find me all across the social medias. That's Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, YouTube, which is where you're probably listening now, or maybe even here on the podcast platform. Sending you big love and wishing you a beautiful day.